On a Monday, it is a State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers vetoed a series of Republican-backed bills last week that would have changed our election laws and put new restrictions on absentee voting. Other voting-related proposals are in the works regarding voter pre-registration and education. That's where we start with Democratic Representative Lee Snodgrass. Do you have a 16 or 17-year-old? Are they ready to vote? Did your civics class do an adequate job of teaching you about voting? It's 800-642-1234. Representative Snodgrass's Assembly District includes Menasha and Central Appleton. Representative Snodgrass, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
So this legislation you've introduced regarding voter education and pre-registration for 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds, why do you think it's important for voter education to begin at a younger age?
Well, actually, this is a bill that came to us from the best way possible, from young people who were disappointed in the lack of information that they had about voting. Two young Oshkosh high school students approached myself and Gordon Hins and Christina Shelton. And we had a really great discussion about why young people aren't voting and how we can encourage them to get involved in the process. So this really came from the young voters themselves and young future voters themselves.
So a grassroots idea, born from that into legislation. When should young people begin to be educated on civic responsibility and voting?
Well, actually, one of the bills would require that voter education start already in kindergarten. It would encourage teachers to have at least 1 hour of civics education, of voter-specific education, obviously appropriate to the age, so that from the very beginning, students are getting used to the fact that voting is just a regular process. It's something that we should all participate in and make sure that it's demystified from an early age.
So how does this bill reinforce or add to the pre-existing curriculum in schools about civics?
The young women did great research on this, and they worked with educators and they worked with local school districts, and it would require, again, just sort of voter-specific information. So at kindergarten, it might just be a fact about, what does representation mean, and, maybe an exercise in that classroom. And as you get older, it's an understanding of how do you register to vote, what is important, what might be on your ballot, all those types of things that unfortunately now we don't always learn at home. And so learning them in school is a great way to make sure we're not missing any of those gaps and we're getting people who are eligible to vote excited about voting even before they're able to legally vote.
And so you're also looking at least 1 hour of voter education instruction in each elementary and high school grade. So really embedding it throughout the education years.
Yeah, I think most of us who are regular voters realize that it's something that we did as children with our parents. We heard our parents talking about voting. Many of us were brought into the voting booth. That doesn't always happen anymore. And as we know, voting is more important than ever. When people say to me, well, I'm not political, I say, well, do you have recycling pickup? And do you have roads that you like to drive on? Essentially, all of these things come down to who you vote for at a local level, a state level, and a federal level. So making sure people understand just how much their voice matters in their everyday life for voting, I think, is really essential.
And explain the legislation about voter pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds. What does that look like?
Well, that's really interesting, too, because, sometimes when people turn 18, obviously there's a lot going on at that stage of your life. You're usually trying to figure out what you're going to do after high school. You're quite busy. And sometimes voting and registering to vote is not the priority. So this would allow our early registration to vote so that you're, ready to go as soon as that's the case. And then one of the bills that Representative Shelton was lead author on actually would require a constitutional amendment, but it would allow 17-year-olds to vote in a primary if they are going to be eligible to vote in that general election. So there's a distinction there for that bill.
We're talking with Lee Snodgrass, a Democratic representative for the 57th Assembly District, includes Menasha and Central Appleton, as we discuss legislation she has had a hand in. You can join in. Do you live in the area? What questions do you have for your representative? Do you have a teenager as they prepare to start voting? How have you prepared them to exercise their Democratic right? 800-642-1234. I want to move on to another piece of legislation you co-authored that would establish a task force to study the legal and societal barriers to equality for transgender, intersex, non-binary, and gender non-conforming people. What areas are you looking at in society that lawmakers are interested in studying?
Well, right now, you know, the Transgender Equality Task Force is really designed so that we can study what these barriers are, so that we can understand what future legislation might be good to introduce so that we can really establish full equality. Right now, there's a lot of discrimination in healthcare, in housing, in the workforce, and we want to make sure that everybody in Wisconsin, no matter how they identify, no matter their gender, has an equal footing and has equal rights in the law. And right now, that just simply is not the case in all situations.
So, you know, this is a really large area. It could be healthcare, it could be education, housing. I mean, the list is employment. The list is so large. How do you tackle this?
Well, you know, I think sometimes people hear the word task force and they kind of roll their eyes and they think, you know, this is a waste of time. But truly, legislators oftentimes, you know, we all come from varying backgrounds. You know, most of us were not politicians from the get-go. We weren't lawmakers from the get-go. So the best way to understand, I think, some of these barriers and some of the information that we simply don't have is to make sure that we bring the experts to the table, make sure that we bring the people to the table who have been working and supporting the transgender community for a while. Might be health experts, might be physicians, it might be somebody in housing, it might be organizations that are already doing that work. And so having all those voices to the table provides us really with a fact-finding situation so that we can truly understand some of the obstacles that people are facing, and we can provide some legislative solutions.
What is the timeline for this committee to convene, to work together?
It was circulating for co-sponsorship in June. As you know, we have a divided house in Madison right now. So we're kind of at the mercy of when these bills are assigned committees, and mm-hmm. if they get into committee and get a hearing, and then if we're fortunate enough for that to happen, to getting it to the floor. So obviously we'd like to see this happen sooner rather than later. You know, we're going to be bumping up against, you know, of course, campaign season for everybody. So I'd like to see this established now. Again, it's not about putting out bills. It's really just about finding information and researching so that we can make sure that Wisconsin is a place that's welcoming and equal for everyone.
Yeah. So why wait to create a task force through legislation rather than just digging in and starting to work on legislation outright?
Well, you know, we didn't introduce the equality agenda in the 2021 equality agenda, which did include a huge package of bills. Transgender Visibility Day was one of them. Transgender Day of Remembrance. There was the Marriage and Family Equality Act, which was also circulated, which you know, makes references in the statutes to gender neutral terms rather than, you know, man and wife. We had the Gender Identity and Gender Expression Non-Discrimination Bill. Trying to eliminate the constitutional restrictions that Wisconsin has on marriage that's still in the books, and then making sure that one of the ones that I was the author on was to eliminate conversion therapy for minors in the state of Wisconsin. So we're doing work now. We've already dug in, and all of those bills were also ones that we drew with the support of the LGBTQ+ community. We had a listening session even before we were all sworn in to make sure that we were doing what people wanted to see from us in terms of LGBTQ+ equality.
We're talking with Democratic State Representative Lee Snodgrass of Appleton. Are you a member of the LGBTQ community? What barriers to equality do you face in Wisconsin? And how should lawmakers address inclusion? What issues do you think lawmakers should be focusing on in these times? Join in 800-642-1234. There's more State Cap in a minute here on the Ideas Network. you have aligned to first-term Democratic State Representative Lee Snodgrass on the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you live in Menasha or in Appleton? What questions do you have for your representative about pandemic protocols? The CDC's COVID tracker says transmission is high in about 80% of Wisconsin. Are you a struggling business in the Fox Valley? What has the pandemic brought? How would you rate the economic recovery in the Fox Cities? 800-642-1234. Representative Lee Snodgrass is with us for about 10 more minutes. Focusing in now on the pandemic, Winnebago County had almost 19,000 confirmed cases. Outagamie County, as of this morning, over 21,000. How is the state working with local health officials to help reduce the spread of COVID in your district?
Yeah, you know, I'm somebody who believes when it comes to something as serious as a global public health crisis, that the state government does have a responsibility to step in. Unfortunately, those attempts were overturned in the courts. So we're dealing with really a patchwork situation here. I think at this point, the best thing that state lawmakers can do is to encourage people to get their vaccination. We know that that is absolutely the best way to prevent hospitalization and death, to encourage people to respect local businesses, local ordinances that require mask wearing. We also know that that's still, in fact, with the Delta variant, incredibly important. So I think all of these things are things that we have a responsibility to do and encourage. But as you noted, right now it's sort of county by county and municipality by municipality.
I hear you say the word encourage. How do you feel about COVID vaccine requirements to stay on the job or to stay in school?
You know, it's difficult because, like I said, I do think when it comes to something like a global health crisis, the state does have a responsibility, and we know that that would discourage, hospitalization and death. At this point, I think that we're in a situation where we need to try and work with individual businesses, organizations, and school districts. I'm strongly encouraging the school districts in my area, which have opted for optional masking, to consider mandating masking, especially for those vulnerable children who are unable to be vaccinated under the age of 12. So I do think that there are cases where mandatory vaccination makes a lot of sense. One of those, I believe, is in the health community. I think if you're going to be serving people front lines as a healthcare worker, of course you want to be protecting yourself, but you also want to make sure that you're not carrying carrying the virus as a asymptomatic carrier. So I do think it's really important in the healthcare community and certain businesses where people are going to be sort of put all together. You know, maybe it's in an airline and things like that, where mandates might make more sense.
And it sounds like you feel that it's okay for, you know, educational systems or businesses to institute mask requirements or wear masks regardless of your vaccination status?
Based on the data from the CDC and the American Academy of Pediatrics and the medical experts, of which very few of our lawmakers are actually medical experts, I do believe that it's important that we protect our youngest, most vulnerable. And that, to me, means requiring vaccinations or mask wearing if you're going to be in those situations.
Let's discuss jumpstarting the Appleton economy for a bit. What are the challenges you're seeing as you look at the economy in your district?
You know, that's actually, I think mask wearing and vaccinations is actually a really big key to economic recovery. I tweeted a while back that getting the vaccine is one of the best things you can do to support businesses because, you know, I look at a business like in my community, the Fox Cities Performing Arts Center, and they want to be able to have, you know, people in seats. They want to have ticket holders again in their concert halls. And with, people traveling from all over, traveling troops, you know, the stage crew, all those things, they want to make sure that the people coming into their environment are vaccinated and aren't going to be inadvertently spreading the COVID-19 virus. So I think that's a really important component. I also think, you know, we can be respectful of businesses who say, hey, I'm requiring a mask when you enter here, to keep making sure that we're shopping at those businesses. And then, of course, we're working through the labor shortage. You know, there is a labor shortage and has been for a while, and that's impacting the Fox Cities as well.
Yeah, I want to pick up there on labor shortages. What would you say to businesses that just can't get people to work or to get fill their jobs. What are you doing about that? What are you saying?
I'm having a lot of conversations about that, actually. I was talking to the public works director in Appleton about the federal infrastructure bill and said, you must be really excited. And her comment was, I'm very excited, but we don't have contractors that can bid on the work we have now because they don't have enough people. So I look at what the barriers are. My next question is, what do you think is the barrier to getting people to work? And every single person that I've asked, whether it be in public sector or private sector, has said the childcare crisis, making sure that we have access to childcare that's affordable and at all hours and all shifts, and transportation, making sure that we have ways that people can get to and from work if they don't own a car. So these are two huge things that we can be working on.
We're talking with Lee Snodgrass, a Democratic representative for the 57th District of the Assembly, includes Menasha and Central Appleton, as we discuss legislation and political issues before her. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you live in the Fox Cities? What questions do you have for your representative? 800-642-1234. Shifting the focus here to pollinators, you and State Senator Melissa Agard introduced a package of bills to protect pollinators. What exactly would this legislation do?
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. This really was inspired by Appleton starting No Mow May a while back, which in our local municipality gave people a pass the month of May from mowing their lawns so that we can encourage more pollinators to be a part of our ecosystem. We know that there is a pollinators are reducing, and we know what that does to our food supply. So this package of bills that I introduced with Senator Agard is really a pollinator protection package. These are bills that would prevent harm from existing pollinator habitats and pollinators themselves.
Okay, and specifically, you know, what species are most at risk, and how would they be protected?
Well, most pollinators are it's birds, it's bees, it's butterflies. So this would impact all of them, primarily, however, bees. You know, the rusty patch bumblebee is a bee that has been added to the endangered species list, actually. And some good news in Appleton is we actually, after No Mow May, spotted a rusty patch bumblebee in somebody's yard. So we do know that this works. One of the bills would allow for local regulation of pesticides to protect pollinators. Right now, everybody's sort of familiar with the ban on bans that does prevent municipalities from making some decisions that are, for instance, banning plastic bags, single-use plastic bags. This would add a ninth exception to the existing state statute, which would allow them to ban certain pesticides that were harmful to pollinators. The other bill would ask the DNR to, within a one-mile radius of any pollinator habitat on protected land maintained by the DNR, they would not be able to use neonicotinoids, which is a particularly harmful pesticide for pollinators. And the other one is really what I would call a truth in labeling bill. And this says that if you're going to be selling plants or seeds that are, quote, friendly to pollinators or pollinator friendly, you have to make sure that they have not been treated with pesticides and insecticides that are harmful to pollinators themselves.
Have you gotten bipartisan support? What have your colleagues said about this package?
Actually, in this divided government, we have gotten some bipartisan support. Two of the other freshman legislators on the other side of the aisle have signed on to a couple of them, so I'm very hopeful. And actually, the conversations that I've been having with people are with Democrats and Republicans alike, who have all realized, you know what, we're going to have to do something. I don't see those birds and butterflies those bees and butterflies like I used to. And so that connection to our food source, knowing how important food production is to Wisconsin's economy, is really something that everybody feels is something that we should all be invested in. So I'm hopeful.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about you as you assumed office at the beginning of the year. What are your biggest priorities as a freshman lawmaker?
It's been a whirlwind. It's been, you know, we were sworn in virtually. This is, you know, politics is definitely a relationship building career. And so it's been difficult for all of us to sort of make those connections that we need to. But the things that I'm working on, I was committed to the pollinator legislation. I'm really excited to be on the Forestry, Parks, and Outdoor Recreation Committee. I'm a big multimodal transportation person, been working on ways that we can increase our connectivity by bikes, and we can make really the Fox Valley the next destination spot in terms of bike trails and walking trails. And I'm also really excited about some of the bills that we have coming up on voter education, as we said. One of the bills that Representative Shelton and I introduced also was a bill that would require state legislators like myself to participate in the process by working as poll workers when we're not on the ballot. So those have been my priorities so far.
Well, Representative Snodgrass, thank you for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Lee Snodgrass is a Democratic representative for the 57th District of the State Assembly, includes Menasha and Central Appleton. Coming up, we talk with the DOT Secretary Designee about what President Biden's infrastructure bill means specifically for Wisconsin. How do you feel about the state of Wisconsin's roads and bridges? It's 800-642-1234 to join in. There's more State Cap after this news update on the Ideas Network.